views expressed on this program are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of IRN, its advertisers, or affiliates.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, they're certainly the views of John Quirk for the first hour. And ordinarily on Wednesday evening, we do open lines, and I love to do open lines, but I felt that what John has to say is so important it would forego what I enjoy doing, because I wanted you to hear John's message. He's just back from the Middle East, and he has a lot of contacts. He spent a great deal of his life working in the intelligence services. And so, John, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Good evening, Stan. We're getting into some really crucial dates in the next few weeks here.
Well, I think we are, too, and that's why I want our listeners to hear what you have to say. So you go ahead and just tell us, as we see things lining up, we understand that there will soon be, if not already, three naval task force there in the Persian Gulf, and I believe we're just simply looking for an excuse to go to war. So go right ahead.
Well, that's the word, excuse. You know, there's been a new kind of study that the Pentagon and the CIA have done about how President Bush and his close inner circle are moving more and more towards war with Iran. Actually, there'll probably be two different things happening over the next couple of weeks. It's what it's all about is the Israeli-Syrian conflict that's starting up with Lebanon and Hezbollah in the middle. And then it's the United States seeking some type of pretext to go to war. It's going to be very difficult for the president to invoke the War Powers Act and get Congress on his side. So there's lots of evidence that the United States is provoking Iran, may even start to engage in cross-border raids on Iranian targets and bomb factories. And as General Petraeus said, and he's talked to lots of people, and Mr. Giuliani's over in England now talking to the British, is that one of the flashpoints is this base run by the Iranian Revolutionary Guards in Fajr in Iran, inside Iran, that's making a lot of the IEDs and projectiles that are killing our troops. So we've got two potential scenarios. We've got provocation between Syria and Israel. The Israelis last week bombed a target inside Syria, a potential nuclear site that the North Koreans were helping them on. Today, just a few hours ago, there was another bomb in Lebanon, probably placed by the Syrians, hoping to overthrow the Lebanese government or marginalize them so Syria can reinforce Hezbollah even more. So the whole part of the world there between Israel and Syria could start a major war, or if the United States continues to look for more provocation. You mentioned several carrier task forces. It's interesting what President Bush just ordered in the last few days. He ordered what we would call is a invasion force. I don't think we're going to invade Iran, but he sent the Kearsarge Kearsarge Expeditionary Strike Group, and it has thousands of Marines, artificial dock loading ships.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, I guess it's John Quirk, and John is just talking about this. Sounds like a Marine landing force or expeditionary force.
Yeah, that's supplementing the three carrier task forces that are in the Gulf now, and three more carrier task forces that are outside the Gulf. The Kearsarge Expeditionary Force has a huge Marine expeditionary group, guided missile cruisers, more submarines to support the subs that are already around the carriers. And it has these very unusual dock landing ships and artificial ports. So that's being moved in to supplement it. And the thing I found about when I was out there is that nobody's talking. There's no diplomacy. There were some efforts, and probably last-minute efforts on the part of the Iranians, but now the United States is not talking. Condoleezza Rice, who has been pushing diplomacy, is trying to continue to talk, but she's starting to close ranks with President Bush and his inner circle, who believe that the only way to stop Iran's nuclear plans are to take military action. The Giuliani and a number of the other presidential people, the leading contenders, Romney, Giuliani, McCain, and even Fred Thompson, are talking now about Iran. I attended the presidential debate the other day in Fort Lauderdale with the other candidates, Ron Paul and Huckabee and Mr. Keynes and John Cox, and not one of them talked about Iraq or Iran. I think there was one small question. The issues were completely different. And it's kind of unusual that the other candidates aren't talking about it, but Giuliani, Romney, McCain, and Thompson are all planning, are either in England talking to our allies or talking about it. So I think what you're going to see, I thought there'd be military action, as I said on your show, in August, but there were some more efforts for diplomacy. There were more efforts to initiate tougher economic sanctions, what the Bush people have done. And I think now what you're going to see, it's a matter of days or weeks before there's a military strike. One thing I would like to revise about what I have been predicting over the last 6 months, I wasn't really sure whether, I thought for sure there would be just limited strikes. I think now we have the potential to have a much larger regional war. I think there are so many forces in the area. The Iranians have...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with John. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Quirk, who certainly has many, many contacts over in the Middle East. He just came back from there about a week or so ago. And he was simply saying that initially he felt there would be a very limited war. It would be the strikes on the Iran's nuclear facilities, but certainly the way things are lining up today with a massive of naval forces we have there in the Persian Gulf. He's expecting that this will be a much larger war than he had anticipated. Are you suggesting that we'll use any land-based forces to at least for the coastal area of Iran? What are your thoughts?
Well, I'll tell you, when you're talking about that, it's a good question, because Iran is now drawing up plans to bomb Israel. The Iranians have something like, they've supplied 20,000 rockets to Hezbollah, and they have these Shabad 3 missiles, about 600 to 1,000 of them, that are all pointed towards Israel. So I think what you're going to see, a more likely scenario, is that I think the Israelis are going to go in against Syria on the ground and the air and really try to take out the Syrian forces. The other thing that we've discovered, probably not been a secret to people in the intelligence community, but the Syrians and Iranians have developed quite a few chemical weapons. And when I was in the Middle East, the Iranians are buying thousands of chemical masks, weapons, chemical suits, They're buying smaller chemical, anti-chemical warfare suits for their children, for their pets. They're accelerating the development and building of bunkers. So the Israelis are, I think the way the war is probably going to go is I think Israel will fight Syria, go through Lebanon with the idea of destroying Hezbollah. The Syrians and Iranians and Hezbollah are going to attack Israel, and the United States will probably launch only massive airstrikes against some 400 to 1,200. Now it's the Pentagon says it's 2,000 military targets. So the Pentagon, I think, is planning not only to attack those nuclear research sites, but they're going to attack where the main Iranian Revolutionary Guard bases are, where IEDs are made, and where there's a whole series of targets the Pentagon has, radar stations, tactical air bases, and so on. And plus, President Bush has actually asked for more troops from England to go into Iraq, and we're moving more and more troops up along the border. So it's very, very tense, and I think this is why it could expand into a regional war.
Well, of course, the thing is that, you know, if certainly, you know, a 1,000 or 5,000 rockets, you know, launched simultaneously at Israel would pretty well knock out a very, very small country there. Is there any way that Israel can defend itself against a massive numbers of rockets coming in simultaneously?
Well, this is what the Iranians have said. They overtly came out today, and they gave a date. The radical wing of the Revolutionary Guard said that on October 12th, this is the day that they're going to go after the Zionists right after Ramadan. It's called Quads Day, and that they said they're going to attack Israel by October 12th. They also came out and said that they've pinpointed Israel with 600 to 1,000 Shihab 3 missiles. And in addition to that, Syria has said any attack on Iran, Hezbollah will launch their small medium range rockets, which are about 20,000. So the Israelis know the Iranians have threatened them, Hezbollah's threatened them, Syria's threatened them. They've given dates. I don't think the Israelis are going to wait around. I don't think they're going to attack Iran. I think they're going to try to attack Syria. And it will be a coordinated attack. The United States will take out Iran and attack Iran, and the Israelis will do a preemptive strike against the Syrians. And it's starting now. There's assassinations going on in Lebanon. As you probably know, the Israeli Air Force attacked a Syrian base about 10 days ago, and they're accusing the United States of helping Israel and giving them intelligence about this so-called North Korean technological base inside Syria. So there's a whole litany of things happening now regarding Israel and Syria, and a whole litany of things happening between the United States and Iran. And I'll stick by my predictions that I've been making for the last 6 months, that there's going to be probably a major conflict in the next month or so.
Well, now, what about the possibility of chemical warfare? Certainly, chemical warfare agents on Israel, they don't have their bunkers. Most of the people there, or many of them, don't have a gas mask because they're Barak, the defense minister, taking the gas masks away from the Israeli people, saying, oh, if the Israeli people had gas masks, that would, of course, make the Syrians think we're going to go to war with them, and yet, if there's any question of war, you would think that the first thing you'd want to do would be to protect your people against the possibility of a chemical warfare attack. This duty doesn't make sense that the leaders of Israel would be actually taking away the gas masks from the Israeli people. Have you heard any of these stories?
Well, if you look at Syria, they started developing chemical weapons in 1973. They're not a signatory of the Chemical Weapons Convention or any international treaties regarding production, manufacturing, or even stockpiling chemical weapons. They didn't sign the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, which also covered chemical weapons. And what happened was this July, there was a big accident in Syria, and a joint Syrian-Iranian team, they were all killed because they were trying to mount a chemical warhead with lethal sarin nerve gas and VX gas. And I think there were something like 20 to 30 of them killed. They were major Syrian officers that had chemical warfare training in Russia, and a number of Iranian engineers that were helping them fit it. So, on the contrary, I have a friend of mine that manufactures a whole series of suits for children, for pets, for adults, and for the military. Some of the U.S. military is using it, and they are going into overdrive manufacturing these things. So I think Mr. Olmert may be engaging in disinformation. He has tremendous pressure on him from the main Israeli political parties, the Israeli population. He's not popular with them. He's trying to engage in diplomacy with Syria, and other elements of the Israeli government have just had it with him. The other day, Olmert came out and said he respected Assad, and the Israeli papers really skewered him for that. So while Israel is downplaying the Iranian threat, they're accelerating the Syrian threat. And as we all know, Syria has been involved in trying to reconquer Lebanon, not only with Hezbollah, but trying to supply Al-Qaeda in Lebanon and overthrow the pro-Western elements of the Lebanese government. So Israel knows if Syria comes back into Lebanon, if they continue to supply Hezbollah, it's like a dagger pointed at Israel's throat. So whether it's Iranian missiles, whether it's Syrian chemical weapons, the Israelis are fed up, and they're also getting very impatient with the Bush administration. So there's no real negotiations going on, even though Olmert may say there is. The Israeli Defense Forces, the Air Force, the Special Forces are all preparing for war.
Well, now, what about Russia and China? Certainly both of these countries seem to have an alignment with Iran, and even to a lesser extent with Syria, but certainly with Iran, I would think that they would be extremely unhappy if America were to attack Iran.
Well, it's interesting. The Iranians have come out, and they basically said that they now possess the necessary military systems to confront or deflect our cruise missiles. Now, what that's all about is that the Russians have sold them very sophisticated radar. They can see planes coming 30 to 40 kilometers away, and they have these like shotgun missiles that can go up and then hit the plane. The Israelis seem more worried about that, about the ability for these Russian aircraft batteries, if you will, radar batteries, to deflect the cruise missiles coming to Iran and many other things. Now, there's been a deal cut between Mr. Putin and the Bush administration. It's all about energy. And there's also been a deal cut between China and the United States. Now, if you look at all the press clippings, probably in the last... if you look at the press clippings from, say, January... June, everything was about how Russia and China would not support sanctions against Iran and would not tolerate any kind of military action against Iran. If you look at the press in the last 3 weeks, you'll find it very difficult to find any criticism by Russia and China against the United States.
Well, of course, would we actually go to war with Iran without any sort of support from the United Nations, without some sort of resolution backing our actions?
Yes, here's the trouble with the United Nations. The perception there is that El Baradei, the head of the International Atomic Energy Commission, strongly condemned the United States the other day because he said we're planning military action. The UN has been very, very quiet because they, in fact, have supported the United States in tougher economic sanctions.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll go right ahead, John. You were just saying that the...
Here's the thing about the Bush administration, and I must say I do support them in this. They from the beginning...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Iranians are helping the militants there kill American boys, and using that as perhaps a provocation, we'll be able to get into the war. Perhaps it'll be precipitated by a special forces attack going over and it'll go into Iran to wipe out some of the factories where supposedly they're building the IED devices. But anyway, of course, John doesn't think that the Bush administration will launch the attack, at least without some support from Congress. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, I think that even if we send special forces in covertly, which we've been doing into Iran,
right.
Let's say we send a special forces group in to blow up this factory that is making the IEDs. This is in Fajr. Watch, you'll start to see it more on the news. It's spelled F-A-J-R. It's a big base where they make these IEDs. The theory being then Congress would know about it. It's happening already in the intelligence circles. Then U.S. action would provoke a major Iranian response. And it could be as follows. And this is what the Russians are hoping for. They could cut off oil supplies, providing airstrikes against Iran's nuclear facilities. Now, the people constantly, criticize Israel for having tremendous influence on our foreign policy. 10 days ago, a big delegation of Saudis came over in Kuwaitis. And they were angry. They were furious with the Bush administration. They want the Bush people to take Iran out now before what happens, as I just mentioned, that there could be a move on the Iranian part to cut off Gulf oil supplies.
Well, you think, of course, if we were to actually attack Iran, that Iran would retaliate not only against our forces, but against Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, and knock out their oil dispensing facilities, their oil shipping points, and drive the price of oil up to $100, $150 a barrel. Do you think that they could create a major oil crisis throughout the world?
Yes, I think they can, and I'll tell you, in the world we live in today, you get intelligence from all different countries. And I had spent some time in Venezuela and Colombia, and the feeling there among the people in Venezuela is that Chavez is going to get involved, and he'll probably try to withhold or cut back American oil supplies to damage us. We get, I think, 14.8% of our oil there. The Gulf will be backed up. China is worried about this. They need all that oil to keep their major economy going. And don't forget, they own quite a few of our treasury bonds. So I think the people that have convinced President Bush that we can go ahead and do this, the Pentagon believes that the war, even if we do 2,000 strikes, will be over in a few days, anywhere from 3 to 6 days. But you never know what could happen. If the Iranian troops, there's quite a few troops now up in it's a place called Shirin and Kermanshah and Ilam and Maran. If they cross the border, in some places we've only got 200 soldiers or 350 troops here and there along that whole border, then that could expand into a bigger war. The United States then might need to call on the Kurds, who CIA has been training for 10 years. That would upset the Turks. And then on the other side of it, a major war between Israel and Syria. You don't know what Jordan's going to do, what Egypt is going to do. Hopefully they'll sit by the sidelines. But I think most likely what will happen on the Iranian side, a number of things. I think they will attack Israel. They'll support Syria. I think they'll attack the power stations and oil fields in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. Venezuela will make some kind of effort to hurt us with some oil, delaying of oil shipments, and so on and so forth. And all of those fears, as soon as the first shot is fired or the first cruise missile is launched, will affect our stock market and definitely the oil prices.
And, of course, the thing that really concerns me, of course, is Venezuela now is just shifting away from the dollar, using it as a reserve currency. They're going to the euro. Certainly, as Iran is doing that, and as more and more countries are moving away from the dollar as their reserve currency of the world, certainly the whole financial structure of the world and of our own currency could come under tremendous, tremendous pressure. We'll be back in just a moment with John Quirk. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John, you'd said before I wondered if you still felt this way, that we have some sort of an agreement with the Chinese that we will somehow help provide them with oil if, you know, their regular oil supplies from Iran are at least temporarily cut off. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's kind of an unusual, it's like a conundrum. It's kind of an unusual thing. The Chinese caused a lot of these problems in the Mideast. And between the time they caused the problems, mainly giving missile technology and some nuclear technology to the Iranians, they also had the Pakistanis under Khan helping them with a nod from China. Pakistan is China's ally. Now it's kind of ironic that now they're not extorting us, they're not threatening us, they're just saying, listen, is the U.S. Navy going to guarantee oil shipments, or are we going to keep getting oil out of the Gulf? And the Bush administration says, yes, we will. So you have the U.S. Navy guaranteeing flows of oil to China. And then on the other side of the world, the Russians, who are up to no good, are hoping for a major series of flashpoints in the Middle East, because then it'll drive the price of oil up, and they are the major supplier of oil, kerosene, gasoline, refined oil products, natural gas to Europe. So now let me talk about a little bit from the financial intelligence standpoint. There's been studies done by the Council for Foreign Relations, which is kind of a globalist, elitist organization, to say the least, and many of our think tanks, and they said by the United States removing the chessboard, we will, A, get access to all that oil, billions of barrels in Central Asia. It's in Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, and so on. So that will give us tremendous access. Point B is that the euro, which is like bouncing around when you actually change dollars as a tourist, somewhere between $1.40 and $1.50, it's killing us, is that that energy that the Russians are going to sell to Europe at inflated prices will drive the euro down again. The American currency will reach an all-time high against the euro, or maybe split the difference. Maybe it'll even go to $1.20, which would be great. And then the Chinese economy is protected. Israel is protected. The dollar is protected.
And hold on now. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John was just saying that he feels that what will come out of what is going to occur is that Russia will benefit tremendously because, of course, the price of oil will go up dramatically, but Russia will not be hurt. They'll be able to continue providing oil to Europe and natural gas to Europe, and as we mentioned before, Russia is the largest oil and natural gas producer in the world today, and if this price goes up, of course, they'll even accumulate more in the way of reserves. There are well over $430 or $440 billion in reserves now. We don't have anything like that. In fact, we're having to borrow money on the international markets now just to pay our daily bills, but Russia will certainly benefit if we do go to war over there, and of course China expects that we'll guarantee their oil supplies, but this will have a profound impact. Of course, John thinks that this may actually help the American dollar, because the euro is going to have to, the European countries are going to have to spend so much money for oil and paying it to the Russians, that this will actually drive the value of the euro down and the value of the dollar up. That's good. That's a very interesting thing to contemplate. Do you really think that's going to happen?
Yeah, and the other reason I think it's going to happen is that Bush is now, President Bush is under tremendous political pressure from his own party. He does not want to leave a lingering third axis of evil. He got rid of two axes of evil. He did a great job diplomatically with the North Koreans. Nobody praises him for that. We did remove Saddam Hussein. I mean, it caused us a quagmire, but people say that we're going to get out of that. And the third axis of evil, Iran, he does not want to leave to either a Republican or a Democratic Party administration. So he's got to move on Iran. The other thing is that a war, or a limited war, military action against Iran, supporting Israel, would help the Republican Party, because most of the American Jewish voters support Hillary Clinton. It's kind of weird, because Bush has been the biggest supporter of Israel, but if we remove Iran from the chessboard, I think it'll help the Republican Party. It'll help Republican candidates, even though it seems at this stage Mrs. Clinton is kind of on a steamroller. She's really moving and garnering votes with her health care, with their position against the war in Iraq. Americans are getting tired of that, and so on. So a war would stimulate, probably, even a limited war, would probably first hurt us in the oil area with oil stocks in the stock market. And then as we gain the upper hand, if there isn't a bigger regional war, it'll really help the American economy, which is starting, I think, to go into recession now. The mortgage meltdown is hurting. The deficit is getting larger. We've got all these carrier groups out there, not just the Iraq war, but these carrier groups that's costing us billions of dollars every month to support all these troops and people on the ships and our bases out there, equal probably to the Iraq quagmire. So I think Bush doesn't think he's rolling the dice. He thinks he's going to come out of this well economically. The country's going to come out of it financially, and we're actually going to be a stronger superpower. Especially if we control all the oil coming out of Central Asia, Iran, and Azerbaijan.
Well, now, what would happen, though, if the Iranians were actually to, say, launch some chemical weapon, chemical tip warheads into the Green Zone and kill half a dozen thousand American soldiers there, or the personnel in the Green Zone? Certainly, that would be a very easy target for them to hit. And what would happen if the Iranians should... You know, I hate to think of the possibility, but should actually take out one or two of our carriers or some of our other ships, what would the implications of that would be?
Well, I think if you look at what Mr. Cheney has said and what the Israelis have said, they're not taking the whole concept of tactical or nuclear weapons off the table. And this is how things accelerate, how wars get bigger and bigger, okay? I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen. I think the other shoe that might drop is that the Iranians have had time to develop terrorist cells in the United States, in Canada, in Mexico, in Latin America, with the support of Venezuela. And we don't know what they have as far as a possible nuclear weapon or a chemical weapon or a biological weapon, for that matter. So... the Iranians, they could be bluffing, but they believe that they have a few aces in the hole. And this isn't just their Islamic religious beliefs that we've talked about before. They feel that they have some aces in the hole. And don't forget, they've had a long-standing relationship with Russia on buying billions of dollars of weapons, radar, and missiles. So... They're not afraid of the United States, and they're not now pushing for any kind of diplomatic settlement, and they don't care about these tougher economic sanctions. They're pumping less oil than they ever had before, and they don't care. They're going to do everything they can to protect their religious state. And so I think, you know, while we as Americans plan these wars very technocratically, I think there is a tremendous danger that there will be a much wider regional war. And if that is in fact the case, we don't win quickly, then I think you will see oil prices really spike high, and there'll be trouble in this country. There'll be lines at the gas stations again. There'll be disruptions. There'll be anger. For sure the Republicans won't get back into power. And there'll be some major economic and political changes after any kind of attack on Iran.
No, because the thing is that if the price of oil were to double or triple here, gasoline, diesel, and that, I mean, it would have an impact on the aircraft industry, certainly on every aspect of our industry as far as a shipping of supplies. But, of course, it would have a tremendous impact overall on our economy. It would really cut back on the amount of money that people had to spend because they'd be spending it for gasoline rather than going down to the Walmart or other stores. So, I mean, I wonder if the people in Washington, D.C. have thought of the implications of if this war should, not be simply a little cakewalk as they, well, I remember, of course, Iraq was going to be a cakewalk. We're just going to be in there a couple of days. We're going to win the war. In fact, the president told us, within about a couple of days, after we had gotten into Baghdad, that the mission was accomplished, that the war was over. Do you think that they've thought of the implications of what would happen, if this war were to expand in the Middle East and of course, the dramatic increase in the price of oil and a really crushing burden upon our economy here? Have they thought about the implications of what they're doing?
Well, I don't know. I think the middle class in this country is getting squeezed in so many other areas that, and there are so many topics in the country that we have now that are non-military topics that maybe the Bush people think they're going to go away. Immigration reform isn't going forward. The NAFTA superhighway, that's going to come to the front. This whole idea of building a highway from Mexico all the way up through the United States and almost to Canada, or I guess to Canada. You've got a lot of the religious right fragmenting. At the presidential debate the other night, not many people talked about the war. They talked about homosexuality. They talked about abortion. They talked about a possible federal amendment which would define what a marriage is. So I think the support the Republican Party has had from the religious right, the evangelicals, the Christian fundamentalists, is fragmenting. Many of them don't like Giuliani because of his position on abortion, but Giuliani doesn't seem to care because he is really campaigning on a terrorist platform. So is Fred Thompson, so is McCain to a certain extent, and so is Romney, where the Democrats seem to be outmaneuvering the Republicans on issues of health care, on the Iraq war, and so on and so forth. So I think the Bush people have said, look at the way we're going to handle this before we leave off, we're going to protect Israel, we're going to remove both Iran and Syria from the chessboard. That will help our economy. It will drive the dollar up closer to the euro. We will guarantee oil supplies and so on and so forth. Now, when the Saudis came over here, they're extremely worried about what could happen. They believe that any attack, even before Israel is attacked, even before the United States is attacked in Iraq by Iranians, they believe they're going to be the victim. And they're very, very angry at the Bush administration for not doing something sooner. So I think that we'll probably be moving maybe one, two, or even three or four carrier task forces into the Gulf to protect Saudi Arabia as well as Israel, and what that means basically is protecting the oil shipments. So we'll have to see how accurate these Shahab missiles that the Iranians have are.
All right, well, I hope and pray we're not going to, but I fear that we will. Before we go on, I'd like you to go ahead and get your website out there, Sydney, and how people can get some of the information that you have, which is fascinating and gives us tremendous insight into this unfolding story. So, would you like to get out to your website or blog site?
That'd be great. My website's a long one. It's www.asset, locationinternational.com. And my email is irgglobal@aol.com.
All right, irgglobal@aol.com. And Sidney John puts out a great deal of fascinating information that will keep you abreast of what's going on. You were actually, were you over in the Middle East? Where were you? Or are you?
Yeah, I was in Europe. I went to Azerbaijan. I stopped in two other Middle Eastern countries, and then I came back through Latin America. I was particularly interested in what's happening in Venezuela. Hezbollah has an office there. Al-Qaeda doesn't train there anymore, but they were training. There's all kinds of agreements between the Iranians and the Venezuelans on containers and shipping and manufacturing and even building a gunpowder factory and exchanges between Iran and Venezuela. I don't trust the Venezuelans. I don't trust Chavez. I think he's crazy enough to try to do something to the United States. The minimal thing he'll do is probably try to cut off our oil to hurt us economically. But he's buying all kinds of more. He's buying even more weapons. He's signing a deal to buy 5 submarines from the Russians. He's bought a lot of Russian equipment. The Chinese are there. They're finishing off their pipeline so China can get oil from Venezuela. And he's giving billions of dollars to Ortega in Nicaragua. He's still funding all these Bolivarian movements. He's kind of wasting his money because his populist Marxism isn't catching on as fast as he thought he would. But he's definitely a threat, and he's a partner with Iran. So the United States, you know, has to keep some military assets in reserve, because most of our military assets, as far as our ships, our submarines, our supply ships, our guided missile cruisers, our destroyers, are in or near the Gulf. And we've felt somewhat energized by the recent agreement with North Korea, and some of those ships are moving out of the Pacific to support our other carrier task forces in the Gulf. So there's definitely a buildup.
Well, now, as far as Venezuela is concerned, is Chavez still continuing his process of nationalization of the oil there and taking away a property from the large landowners as he goes about this process of redistributing the land?
Yes, he's doing lots of things. He's trying to tell people that if they have a 4-bedroom apartment, they should give 2 of the bedrooms to the poor people. If there's empty land, the poor people can squat on it. If there's empty houses, Chavistas can move into it. He's harassing American citizens that were born in Venezuela when they go back. He's harassing them at the airports. He is starting to negotiate a so-called peace agreement with FARC in Colombia. He's going to actually hold a summit between the Colombian government and FARC. Makes a lot of sense because Chavez has given a lot of aid to the guerrillas, so it'll raise his prominence in Latin America, he thinks. He's continuing to ship large amounts of oil to Cuba and give them money, billions, and he's building a huge refinery in Venezuela, Cuba. He's trying to build refineries and bases in other places in the Caribbean and giving out aid, especially if it hurts the United States. He made a crazy statement 12 days ago, and he said if the CIA does not get out of Latin America, he will declare war on us.
And I think that's really a very interesting thing, and I want our listeners to know that Chavez is threatening to declare war on the United States. Now, either this man is totally mad, or he thinks that we're going to be in real trouble when we invade Iran, because doesn't he have some sort of a non-aggression pact with Iran? If they're attacked, then of course he will support them.
He has not only a non-aggression pact; they have the Venezuelans have a nuclear facility. It's called IVIC, and there's Iranian engineers working in there. They have a small reactor, and there have been a lot of rumors without a lot of evidence that he's building a biological weapons plant with Cuban help and Iranian help in the jungles of Venezuela. And, you know, last year he said that two nuclear devices or small nuclear devices went missing in Venezuela. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Iranians or somebody else has helped them maybe have smuggled a nuclear device into the country. We cannot possibly cover all the containers that are shipped from Venezuela to Miami and Texas and other parts of the United States. We do have very good intelligence now. We focused a lot of our National Security Agency and National Reconnaissance Office intelligence over Venezuela. But it's very difficult to keep track in that part of the world of what's going on because there's a lot of jungle, forest borders, and he's encouraged large numbers of Islamic jihadists to settle in Venezuela. So who knows what he's planning to do. He doesn't care about any reaction from the United States because he doesn't care about the Venezuelan people.
But is he continuing to arm the Venezuelan people with automatic weapons?
Well, the Chavistas, he's passed out 250,000 AK-47s. He's ordered more. He's trained them. And he's more than that, though. He's democratically...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, go ahead, John. You were saying he's democratic?
He's democratically got the Congress. Only one person in the Venezuelan Congress voted against him, which is going to give him power until the year 2020. He's going to be a democratically elected dictator. I mean, the people have voted for this. I mean, there has been very minor election fraud, but the people want him, and he's declared to be a dictator, and he tells the people what to do. He's closed down the television and radio stations. He's making it more difficult for the middle class to survive there economically, and he's been successful in pitting people against each other. The rest of the Latin countries, though, are starting to see him for what he is, just a loudmouthed, two-bit dictator that hates America, that doesn't really have a foreign policy. His foreign policy is hate America, where even countries, you know, like Nicaragua with Ortega in there, they want more trade. They want economic development of the country. So if they'll take money from Venezuela, so will Ecuador and Bolivia. But you know as well as I do, communism in the end doesn't really deliver anything to the people. And the rest of the country, they'll get tired of Chavez. He's just a, kind of a flash in the pan. And the only danger is what's going to happen in the next couple months, what he plans to do to support his Iranian allies. He may do nothing, but I think he's got a few things up his sleeve against America.
Well, I really think that we're living in very dangerous and very uncertain times, and I think it's so important that the tragedy is, I don't think the average American really realizes how serious this situation is. What are your thoughts?
No, I think that the average American is so occupied by paying his mortgage payment and bills, which is understandable, and they're worn down by this Iraq war that it doesn't seem to have any progress, and we keep losing our boys and girls over there, and we don't have the security in Iraq. We're arming both the Sunnis now, and we've been arming the Shias, and it seems like a crazy situation there, Kafka-esque situation. And back here, we've got issues. People there's 50 million people that don't have health care. This whole idea of the NAFTA superhighway is going to get people upset. We're not sealing off our borders. We're letting just people come through, as they want, which is a security concern.
John, we're out of time, but God bless you. I got to call you. I want to get you on the other programs. Thanks so very much.
My pleasure. God bless you.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I hope you enjoyed the interview with John. If you'd like to get the complete interview, why, of course, it is available for Radio Liberty when we talk through the breaks. But what you really need to understand is our attention is being focused on Britney Spears, on O.J. Simpson, And yet, of course, we're facing a major war in the Middle East. Could have disastrous consequences on our economy, and I'm much less optimistic about the implications of what will happen to the dollar, the price of oil, to our economy than John is. So it's going to be very interesting to see this unfold, but I agree that we are facing difficult times, and if you haven't made your preparations, you really, really better start not putting things off right now. If you'd like to get some of the material we have, the DVD, Sheltering in Place, what would you do if there was a chemical, biological, or neurological, or biological or nuclear attack on America? How would you survive? Well, Sheltering in Place, the DVD, is important. Nuclear War Survival Skills, and a packet that will actually tell you how to build a little radiation meter. It almost looks like a toy, but it works. It was actually designed by the military for the defense of the American people. But since our leaders have no intention of defending us any more than the Israeli leaders have any intention of defending the Israeli people, you're going to have to prepare to look after yourself. Certainly our book on making the best of basics. You should have a potassium iodate on hand to actually load your thyroid with iodine in case there was some sort of a nuclear attack. And you ought to have a supply of, if not of antibiotics, and of other things that will build your immune system. If you'd like to get a copy of our health catalog, we'll be glad to send it. It's got some suggestions on things that you really would want to have that will build up your immunity. If you'd like to get our emergency food and supply catalog, we'll be glad to get one for you. And I don't care whether you get them through us or someplace else. We don't make any money. We do what we do because we're trying to warn the people, and any profit, of course, simply pays for our stations. But if you would like to get the emergency catalog, at least it lists the things that you should get, and don't put it off. And if you have a catalog, why, of course, should make your preparations. Now, we're talking about somewhere between weeks to months before something big is going to happen. All those carrier task force are not just over there, in the Persian Gulf, so they can enjoy the advantages of a nice summer in Arabia. Of course, we're going into a fall now. Well, anyway, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. I want to remind you, we are going to have an all-day conference here in the Monterey Bay area on October 28th, and we do hope that you can come, and we'll have a time for asking questions and hopefully answering the questions. We've got a great lineup of people who are going to be here, and it's going to be all day, and we're going to, of course, lunch will be provided, so you're going to have a reservation. We have to know how many are coming. And if you're coming from outside the area, why, of course, you've only got until the 28th of September to get a room at a special reduced price. After that, you're going to be paying the full expense for a hotel room, at least at the Seacliff Inn, where it's quite convenient to a Seascape golf course. And this, believe me, is a beautiful, beautiful area. We've been there every year. And the Monterey Bay area is one of the most beautiful areas in the world. I've been blessed to live here for, certainly 50 years or more. So our telephone number again is 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free catalog, just a regular catalog, if you'd like to get a free newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one. Of course, we really hope you're going to want to subscribe to the newsletter. But you really need to sit back and evaluate what's going on behind everything going on today. Of course, there are powerful spiritual forces. We're told in the scriptures the day is coming when Damascus is going to be destroyed. It has never been destroyed in the past. And yet, of course, I suspect that it will be destroyed in the coming terrible war. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course, hopefully, this next hour, the views of Tom Horn, who's to be our guest this evening. And Tom is a fascinating individual. I've had an opportunity to get to know him very well through the years. Tom is an evangelical minister, Protestant minister, who, of course, came into contact with some people who were with a person who was demonically possessed. And it was his first encounter with this. A fellow came into the church, and it was quite an experience for him. When he suddenly realized that there really is this other dimension out there. And if you, of course, can utilize the power, you don't have any power on your own, but through the power of our risen Jesus Christ and the blood of Jesus Christ, the demons will actually respond. And as incredible as it may seem, this is how I think he got introduced to these concepts, and he came to be an exorcist for a time. But now he's publishing a number of books that deal with this spiritual battle that I talk about so frequently, and his books include the spiritual warfare, the gods that walk among us, the Ahriman Gate, and lastly, Nephilim Stargate. Fascinating books. But this hour, we're going to be talking about something else he's very interested in, and I think we should all be interested in, and that is preparedness for disaster. He actually has his own company that he's put together to try to get people to begin making the preparations for the very difficult times that do lie ahead. So without further ado, let's go to Tom Horn. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Dr. Monteith, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing just fine, and so I'm so glad you could be with us. And of course, we just were talking with a gentleman, a friend of ours, who's just back from the Middle East, and has actually been to he knows a number of the people over there on a first-name basis. And of course, the picture he paints of the very real possibility of a war, a massive war in the Middle East, is not simply a possibility, but a probability. And of course, although our leaders are talking about a cakewalk, I remember Iraq was going to be a cakewalk too. We're talking about a six-day war. Well, of course, it could be a six-year war, or maybe a war that will never end. But once we get into a war with the Islamic world, I fear for our country. So what are your thoughts about what's going on?
Well, Dr. Monteith, I mean, a very good friend of mine, in fact, I won't name him, but he's been doing some of these preparedness shows with me, and he's an expert in this field. He actually provides not only information, but even equipment to the Department of Homeland Security, to the federal government, and he just returned from D.C. I'm hedging here because I'm not sure what I should say about this, but I know he met with some congressmen, and the truth is that it will be amazing if we make it through the end of this year without a significant situation in the United States that will at least appear to be an attack upon our soil by foreign interests.
And so whether it is a real attack or whether it's feigned to be an attack and simply being another Gulf of Tonkin incident, it really won't matter. An awful lot of Americans could lose their lives. Is that what you're suggesting?
I'm saying that whether you want to call it a false flag or whether you want to call it a legitimate attack upon foreign soil, I mean upon American soil by foreign terrorists, it will be amazing if we make it through the end of the year without something that Trump 911.
Hold that thought right there. All right, Tom, go right ahead.
It'll be amazing if we make it through the end of the year without something that makes 911 pale by comparison. And, you know, talking about now preparedness, September is the National Preparedness Month, and people should know that my family has practiced personal preparedness all of our lives, essentially. I grew up in a military home, and you would certainly recall back in the day when civil defense was certainly part of our public education. I mean, you know, in school, us kids were taught what to do if we were attacked, if nuclear war broke out. Civil defense is something that's been vacant from American education for a long time. But what caused me, personally, several years ago, to begin urging people at large, in other words, to make this an emphasis at Raiders News Network, for people to take up the responsibility of disaster readiness, well, was several things. 9-1-1, of course, and then I think just a general sense that our country has changed, and the world is changing. Weather is changing, and people need to be independent and capable of taking care of themselves and their families during emergencies, and that's true now more than it has ever been, at least in my lifetime. I mean, if 9-1-1 and Hurricane Katrina and other recent disasters have shown us anything, it's that it's unwise for people to expect the government or agencies of the government to be able to respond quickly to everybody's needs during a significant disaster situation. But the truth, Dr. Monteith, and I guess maybe I'm a little more comfortable to talk about this on your show than I do on other shows, and you may actually even be aware of some of this. There was a situation in the fall of 2005 that convinced me that I needed to take a greater role in encouraging people to be independent and capable of caring for themselves during a large-scale disaster. And what happened was that in October of 2005, I became aware through a source of the first rank that I should avoid certain cities during the Christmas season. Now, you may not recall this, but at the time I talked about this a little bit on some radio shows, and it created a really big hoopla on the internet, especially how I learned that there were certain cities where I shouldn't be, and why I was certain that information was real.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Tom Horn of the Raiders News Network. It's Raiders News Network, and they have a wonderful website. But Tom was saying that Sydney in the winter there of 2005 he had become aware of information that suggested there were certain major cities that were potential targets here in the United States. Is that a fair statement, Tom?
Well, that's true, and how I learned about that and why I was certain of the information was something that I had to be very careful at the time not to talk about openly. And there's a lot of details to this. I mean, I could share some of this with you privately sometime off the air, but I said what I could at the time on the Q-Files, actually, and I was on with Steve Quayle, who's been a friend of mine for a long time, and I said a couple of things to him. Well, then shortly thereafter, I was on with Zeph Daniels, who you know. In fact, you endorsed his last book. But Zeph asked me on Channel Z to clarify what I had said on the Q-Files. And I wouldn't have said anything at all, except that I was very concerned about what was going on. Anyway, my comments, as well as some that were made by Steve Quayle, was followed up on a month or two later by a different man who was claiming to be a reporter, and then all of a sudden some bloggers. I mean, this thing really got out of hand. And frankly, most of the details that they were reporting was wrong. What I said to Steve Quayle in the Q-Files and what I repeated to Zeph Daniels on Channel Z was concerned what I had been told about avoiding certain U.S. cities during the month of December of 2005. The warning came as a result of a memo that had been passed through some high-ranking political and military staff offices concerning a very real threat having to do with, number one, several small chemical dirty weapons, and secondly, a weapon of mass destruction, in particular a nuclear weapon, coming across the U.S. southern border. And this was a memo that was for select staff. It was coded high priority. It was repeat verified. And this was followed by the international intelligence community's collaboration, who had picked up on the electronic trail by the terrorist cells on different continents. This was part of Interpol. This included Asian intelligence, French, Canadian, United Kingdom, Argentine, and of course the U.S. NSA and FBI and Border Patrol. And just so people know, they had put up these sensing devices, monitors, as well as agents on the ground on our southern border, who particularly were focused during the month of December 2005 on the Arizona border. And this was a private communication at the time. It was going on between me, Steve, and a guy that I call Phobos, which isn't his name, at the time. That was going on in the last weeks of November and the first weeks of December. And by Christmas, the intensity of the search for what they were looking for was such that I felt that people in Arizona deserved to know, and I wanted to go public. But I was sworn to secrecy to my contact. But the bottom line is, it made me so, I physically was ill. It made me so sick, the idea of what could happen, that Steve Quayle was calling me every day during November and December of 2005. He was praying for me over the phone. And in the weeks following, Steve and I and a couple of other people were watching, interestingly. And it was while searching for what I at that time coined Big Bird, searching for that the migration of that over the Arizona border, that these investigators found these tunnels that were being used by the drug cartels. That wasn't what they were looking for, but as they focused on the border, that's what they found. This is where this so-called reporter who grabbed my conversations with Steve and Ziff made a wrong turn on the facts, and he began saying that there was a device coming through one of these tunnels on its way to Texas. That was not the case. That was absolutely wrong. But in any case, Big Bird was actually captured just before Christmas of 2005, and Dr. Monteith, it still concerns me that this might be used at some point, and that's where this could become a false flag situation. Well, anyway, I don't want to become conspiratorial here, and I do have friends that I need to make sure I don't offend them by saying any of those things. But it was captured. There was also a couple of smaller elements that were captured. And ironically, the biggest part of this story has never been told. And someday, if possible, when the time is right, I may tell this story. But it may never be told. And it had to do with a mole and the reason behind the intense interrogation of several offices in the United States federal buildings, in particular in one U.S. congressman's office, that was in the news shortly thereafter. You might even remember that. In late 2005, there was some certain congressmen who were being investigated, but it really all ties into this whole story. I'm going to get past that. I want to just move past it because I can't really talk about it. But you'll note if you go back to the Zeff report in 2005, actually the archives might still be up there. Download those archives and listen to what I said. The night that I said what I did on his show, Zeff specifically asked me if the residents of Arizona were in danger, and I said that according to my information, they were not the target. So those who were saying that they were the target were making things up, saying it was Texas, other places. I never identified that information. I can't, nor the particulars as I received them, which were verified, though, however, independently by Steve, who made some contact information behind my back, and then later on told me that he had verified that what I had said concerning the logistics, support, and details, including the verification of the facts concerning that incident. So that simply suffices to say that this was one of those times where the watchmen on the wall were protecting the rest of us while we slept. Frankly, the public wouldn't have benefited anyway from that knowledge, and it was better off that nobody knew anything about it. But I said all of that to say this, and probably shouldn't have said some of that. That period affected me so profoundly, And those who have paid attention to Raiders News Network since 2005 have seen that there was this sudden addition to emphasizing personal preparedness and safety. In fact, where we can, we actually provide material free. And in many other cases, and people don't know this, but many of the things that we offer through SurvivorMall.com, we're doing that at dealer cost. We're actually putting those things out at what it costs us to buy them. And we're doing that in order to help people meet their personal preparedness goals. And we're doing it because it's something that I believe in now, and it's something that I believe ought to be being emphasized in individuals' lives. The ability to be independent, to be prepared for whatever might come. So whether it's a false flag or an actual terrorist attack on U.S. soil, it's my personal opinion, and I pray to God that I'm wrong, but it's my personal opinion that that before this year is ended, people are going to be in a situation where they need to be capable of taking care of themselves, Dr. Monteith.
Well, I wouldn't be at all surprised. I feel very, very, very strongly that something very, very significant is about to happen, and I think that we're being, our attention is being focused on intentionally and purposely and certainly maliciously on O.J. Simpson, on Britney Spears, on the financial situation in this country, and many people are watching the stock market and all the other things very, very closely to see what impact the Fed's action is going to take. Whereas, of course, I believe the lives of literally millions of Americans are in potential danger, and nobody ever wants to tell them that, and very, very few people, very few people, are really prepared to look after themselves in case of a major disaster. Now, do you also think that people should have gas masks and things of that sort?
Well, I think that it wouldn't hurt. I mean, there are circumstances in which having potassium iodide, a gas mask, something like that, can keep people alive. I don't know necessarily that, you know, like at Survivor Mall, we have a military-grade gas mask, but it's very expensive, something like $200, and that's our cost on it. I don't think it's quite that. It's like $189 or $190, and it's actually what it costs us to buy it. But we also have a very inexpensive gas mask there that was a civilian-grade gas mask. It was actually built by the Russian government, these gas masks, and we're offering those with potassium iodide and a book on how to survive nuclear disaster and everything else. I think it's like $29 or $39. It's whatever it costs us. But that would protect them for 8 hours, so it gives them an opportunity to be able to get out of a particular disaster location. It gives them 8 hours to get out of that area before their body cuts in their skin or even breathing. They begin to intake these contaminants that could be in the air. It's a very real possibility. And one of these days, you and I maybe should do a different show where we talk about why we're in this predicament now, and frankly, I think it has an awful lot to do with the current administration. We've literally unleashed on Americans, a significantly increased probability of a terrorist attack on the U.S. soil, and I can't tell you back when, before we invaded Iraq, I had at that time 20 people who were employed by me. And I still remember the day when I called in my staff, I set them around a table, and I said, I'm going to tell you something. I said, if we invade Iraq, this will be the next Vietnam. That'd be the biggest mistake we've made in generations, and it'll be just like beating a bee's hive. It will unleash upon Americans a terrorist jihad that we are not prepared for. And I could go into that, but I hear the background music, but I'll tell you, I'm not a prophet, but I feel like one now.
Well, I think, of course, we were told it's going to be a cakewalk, you know, why it's all over, mission accomplished. The president landed a plane, or pretended he landed a plane on the carrier, and then the big, big banner there on that aircraft carrier, mission accomplished. It's all over. That was the impression we got. But, of course, it wasn't true. And, of course, the war continues and will continue on indefinitely. Well, I guess it's Tom Horn, and we're talking about the the very real threat to America today, and I don't think that most Americans are really, really concerned about it. They cannot actually bring themselves to accept the fact that something terrible could happen to America. There's almost a Pollyanna type of attitude, like it couldn't happen here. And yet, of course, as I often like to tell our listeners, if God is just, he is going to bring judgment on this country. And I think that everything we are doing is to actually promote God's and to bring God's judgment on America. Will you pick up the thought there, Tom?
Well, and this is the thing. I mean, if it's a matter of God being involved in what's going on American soil or what will be going on in American soil, it still does not mean that as Americans and even as Christians that we ought not be prepared to try to fulfill our responsibility as leaders of our families to take care of those whom God has given us responsibility for. This is a thing, you know, even when I was pastoring, it was amazing to me that many people who are believers in God, especially in America, are indifferent to the need to be prepared for the unexpected. There was an article by Mimi Hall in USA Today a while back talking about how most Americans, since 9/11, haven't taken the least step to prepare for a disaster, whether it's a natural disaster or a terrorist attack, other emergency, and that only about a third of Americans had actually made plans with family members about how they would communicate with each other during a crisis, which means that we literally, in a real emergency, we would experience chaos. Absolute chaos, which unfortunately opens the door for the government to come in and impose martial law.
Now, I really think that the government is planning on doing that. If they were not, they would not be giving Halliburton $385 million a year just to stand by and to be ready to build concentration camps. Why would you, in any sense of the imagination, offer a private company, or at least a subdivision of Halliburton, $385 million a year to stand by to build concentration camps unless you were planning on building concentration camps? And why would you plan on building concentration camps in America unless you were planning to use them? And nobody ever wants to ask those questions. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you doubt what I'm saying and you have access to a computer, simply Google in Halliburton, $385 million concentration camps. Go ahead, pick the story up there.
Well, Proverbs 22:3 tells us that a prudent person will foresee difficulties and prepare for them, while a simpleton will go blindly on and suffer the consequences. Well, that's and that's very good biblical advice, not only for religious people, but just people of any persuasion. The truth is, survival preparation is something. I was on a show last night with Shane Connor, and we were talking about preparedness, and he made the point that that all of this is almost common sense stuff that our forefathers already knew. I mean, farmers and stuff, they knew how to purify water, they knew how to survive on their own. But we're living in a generation now that we've become children of the establishment. I mean, we expect the government to take care of us, and that's the reason why it might be very easy for us to submit to a martial law and to give up our individual privacy and our individual rights given any kind of an emergency situation.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Tom was just saying that the attitude of so many people is, well, you know, the government's going to look after us, and if there's an emergency, why, the government will have a program, and I fear that they do. I fear that they are preparing to build concentration camps. They already have a number of them. They are refurbishing the Japanese concentration camps that were used during the Second World War out in the middle of the desert there in Utah. They have given Halliburton or one of their subdivisions $385 million a year for a four-year contract. If anybody would like to see the articles out of the paper, we'll be glad to send it to them. To stand by to be able to build concentration camps, and why would anybody be doing that? Why would the government be doing that unless they were planning on having concentration camps built and putting people into them? So I think that people really have to understand that there are people in Washington, D.C. who have a different worldview. But you go ahead, pick up the story there. And we've got actually a couple of people calling in, so
okay.
We're going to open up the lines here in just a moment. In fact, let's go ahead. We've got Tom on the line here in Ohio. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Pretty good, Stan. Do you know if Bob Griswold is still around? I used to have his phone number. He had some supplies.
Yes, he does. In fact, you can give him give me a call after tomorrow, and I'll be glad to get his telephone number.
Also, I didn't get the newspaper article, unfortunately, but the Russians are going to build. They're negotiating with the rulers in Scioto County in Ohio here to build a $1 billion steel mill.
I wouldn't be surprised. They've got a lot of money, and why shouldn't they? After all, they got all those American dollars. Why not spend them here? Anything else, Tom, before we let you go?
Well, I took my little poll with the people here, or whatever they are, and they love it. They think, and then I started trying to joke with them. I said, but you know, they're going to pay you in vodka.
All right, okay.
They looked at me like it does not compute.
All right, thanks very much, Tom. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was Tom calling from Ohio. And, of course, but the thing is, I think that certainly the point that I guess Tom Horn is making is that it is vitally important that people begin making preparations to look after themselves and their families. And certainly you can't help anybody else unless you can survive on your own. And I think God calls upon us to make preparations, certainly spiritually, but physically as well. So go ahead, Tom.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, and the irony here is that if you go to ReadyGov.com or the Department of Homeland Security, the government, you know, this month, this is not only hurricane season and the sixth anniversary of the World Trade Center terrorist attack, but this month has been designated by the U.S. government as National Preparedness Month to remind citizens that they need to prepare for potential emergencies in their homes, businesses, and schools. Now, I have some major, serious problems with our current administration. I'm very suspicious of anything they do, and I think the Department of Homeland Security has been, just incapable of most of the responsibilities that it has been given. But the irony is that the superficial advice that they offer is something that we've been playing off on and saying, you know, almost kind of like when Jesus said about the Pharisees, he said, do what they're telling you and do what's in the law, but I mean, don't follow their pattern and don't give yourself to them. It is very important that people do the basic things now. The old civil defense issues of the 50s and 60s that we were trained as a nation to do before we got into this current situation we're in now, where you have supplies, you have food supplies, you have products set aside that in case power is out because of some emergency situation, whether it's a storm or a terrorist attack, that you have emergency supplies, that you have a family emergency plan, that you have an ability to be able to respond to what happens, because the truth is, at a moment's notice, people could be without the creature comforts that they take for granted. And you don't want to be stuck in a situation where you have your hands out to the government waiting for them to come and save you, because if Katrina and some of the other emergencies we've had in the last couple of years have taught us anything, it's that the Federal Emergency Management Agency and some of these other agencies probably are not going to be there. Maybe not for a week, maybe not for 2 weeks, maybe not for 3 weeks. And if you're going to survive, and if your children are going to survive, and if your family is going to survive, it is very intelligent on your part and reasonable and even expected in terms of biblical theology for you to be in a position where you can take care of those whom God has placed in your trust.
And I certainly agree with you totally, and I think that we have to be like the watchman on the wall, warning people that this is the time, and I really believe, and I've been at this for 45 or more years, that this is the time more than any, and that we have to be prepared for ourselves and for our families. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. I guess this is Tom Horn. Well, Tom, what sort of things should people really begin laying in?
Well, a lot of this is very basic, and that's the good news, that you don't have to have a degree in biotechnology, which is the other thing you and I most usually talk about, to be able to understand what you need to do. I mean, it's just like having a working smoke detector in your home. Having emergency supplies in the right place and having a family emergency plan puts the power back in your hands instead of relying on the government. It puts the tools that you need at your fingertips to be prepared. So either purchase an emergency supply kit or go. I'll tell you what. Go to SurvivorMall.com. And when you get to SurvivorMall.com, in the left-hand column, pull down the margin until you see a link that says Free Survival Guides. This is a link that will take you to a downloadable page where there are literally hundreds of pages and books. Some of these books are 200 pages long each, reports and booklets, all on how to perform first aid, how to prepare temporary shelters, how to build bomb shelters, how to defend against terrorism, chemical contamination, shielding against nuclear fallout, how to survive earthquakes, how to survive storms, how to survive floods, literally dozens of sudden emergency situations material. It's all free. You go there, you download it. We'll even pay the bandwidth for you to download it. It's not going to cost you a dime. Feel free to go there and download those books and reports. Link your website to that page if you want to. Print those materials out, put them in your church foyer, teach a Sunday school class on them, whatever. But put those materials out there. I mean, there's books there on not just self-defense, but pandemic flu preparedness, family emergency plans, business readiness, how to build a grab-and-go bag, basic first aid. There's emergency contact cards. There's emergency management guides. And by the way, these are not written by novices. These were all written by civil defense people. These were all written by people who are experts. Some of them are the Federal Emergency Management Agency guides on how to have a fallout shelter, emergency preparedness guides from fire departments, emergency guides for disabled people and employees, emergency responses to terrorism, shortwave radio networking when the phones go down, Army Corps radiation protection manuals, carbon monoxide. Boy, I mean, there's so much stuff there. It's literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages that we spent a great deal of time finding, turning into PDFs, putting
hold
online.
Tom, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Tom Horn. And before we go on, Tom, I want you to get your website out for our listeners. How can they get in touch with the material that you have available?
Go to SurvivorMall.com.
SurvivorMall.com, right.
Yeah, how to survive, SurvivorMall.com. You'll see that we have material there, most of it, the food, the water, everything. We're literally selling it at what we pay for it, believe it or not. The shipping's a little expensive on some of those things because food bars and water, these are very heavy products, but they're 5-year shelf life, absolutely 5-year shelf life guaranteed products. But on the left-hand column, if you'll pull down about halfway through the website, you'll see the link there that says Free Survival Guides. I want to encourage you to go there. It won't cost you a penny to do it. Download those PDF guides, print those guides off, and do the things that it tells you to do. Because what it will do is it will put power in your hands so that instead of sitting back hoping nothing happens, but if it does happen, you're going to be on the phone or trying to find your local emergency personnel, which during a major emergency, they're not going to be able to get to you for 2 or 3 weeks. This will put the power in your hands. Most of what you need to survive is really not that difficult. I mean, a lot of it is stuff you probably already have at your home, in your garage, but knowing how to use it in order for you to protect your family. Those are the important things, and we've provided all of it for you for free. So go to SurvivorMall.com, go to the left column, pull down until you see where it says Free Survival Guides. There's hundreds and hundreds. I mean, one document alone is over 200 pages long, and these were developed by U.S. military personnel, by civil defense people, on how to do everything from developing a fallout shelter to how to protect your physiology so that you won't be contaminated by contaminants in case there's a dirty bomb that is set off in the city where you may be living. So we want you to have those materials, get those materials, and use them. Now, there are several things that you need to focus on in particular. The government is wrong. I'll just tell you straight out. When they tell you to be prepared to take care of yourself for 72 hours, that's absolutely wrong. FEMA showed us that they didn't get to some of those people for several weeks. So you need to be able to take care of yourself for at a minimum 1 week, but 3 or 4 weeks is best. So you need to do two things. One, at your home, whether it's your basement or some other part of your home, have enough food set aside. And you can have canned food. Make sure you have plenty of mechanical can openers, hand-operated can openers for canned food. Of course, you can go to Survivor Mall and you can buy food bars that have been approved by the U.S. government for 5-year shelf life, and we sell them at our cost. But if you don't want to do that, I don't care. Go to Albertsons and get particular kinds of foods that you would set aside. Now, these are things that you should choose that have protein, like fruit bars, dry cereal, granola, canned foods, things you don't have to cook, juices, peanut butter, dried fruit, nuts, crackers, baby food. And also think about if you have people in your family that may have a particular diet, like a senior citizen or someone, or an infant, and make sure you have foods that would be set aside for them that can be stored on the shelf for a long time, that are not going to mold or whatever and go bad, and that don't necessarily have to be refrigerated. And in fact, it's preferable that they don't have to be refrigerated. But there are two other things that you need to do in order to have yourself set up so that you can survive. And these are the most important. Number one is water. You can survive for 21 days without food, but you can only survive about 3 days without water, and then you die. Now, the old axiom that says that you store 1 gallon of water per person per day for drinking and sanitation, and do that in clean plastic containers, you should do that as far as setting up water situations for your home. But if you have to grab a go bag and go, there's no way in the world, if you've got several members in your family, that you can haul 1 gallon of water per person per day. So you'll find guidelines at SurvivorMall.com that show you how much water you need to be able to basically survive. But the other thing about water is knowing how to purify it. I want to emphasize water, because you won't survive hardly any time at all. And children, especially infants, will die even sooner if they don't have water. So you need to know how to use nature's water, how to purify water by killing microorganisms like Giardia or whatever it is.
Giardia is the term. Giardia.
Giardia, cryptosporidium, things like that. Now, because you don't want to have... Thank you, Dr. Monteith. I'm glad I have a doctor.
Well, one of the few things I remember from my years of medicine, that goes back 50 years ago when I was studying, 55 years ago, really, when I was studying tropical medicine.
Well, the thing is that people, you know, if there's 7 or 8 of them and they're all out there, and maybe they're having to hoof it out on foot, and all of a sudden they got diarrhea, cramps, they got these other health problems that are developing. So you have to know how to purify water, and it really is not that difficult. These are the old things we were taught 20 years ago in our public schools. Number one, you can purify water by boiling water vigorously for 5 to 10 minutes. Secondly, you can purify water by using an eyedropper and adding 8 drops of liquid chlorine bleach, non-scented chlorine bleach, per gallon of water, or 16 drops if the water's cloudy, and then let it stand for 30 minutes before you use it. You can also purify water by using a 2% tincture of iodine from your first aid kit. You add 20 drops of water per gallon, or 40 drops of water if the water's cloudy. You let it stand for 30 minutes before you use it. You can also use water purification tablets. Now, we have the military-grade water purification tablets at Survivor Mall, but you can also get water purification tablets at your local drugstore, sporting goods store, And this is not going to take up very much room. Put it in your go bag, and don't forget to follow the directions on the label. You can also use commercial water filters. Some of these are very small. We have one that we sell at Survivor Mall. I don't remember exactly what the name of it is, but it's literally just a handheld glass. You put water in, you suck through a straw, but it's actually coming through a filter, and it removes the bacteria, the protozoa, the viruses, chemicals, whatever that's in that water. So there are ways to do that. Now, also, think about places like Arizona. If there are people that are listening to this radio show tonight and you live in a hot place like Arizona, Dr. Monteith, I never forget how growing up in the Arizona desert, because that's where I grew up as a kid, and I was always amazed every year when the Phoenix Gazette would run articles. They probably ran articles this year about people whose car would break down in the Arizona desert and they would die of heat exposure. And yet, here they were surrounded by barrel cactus and other cactuses that are just plumb full of water. So you look at what nature is doing. Watch them little birds land on those cactus and suck the water out of those cactus. You just take a big rock, anything you can find in the desert, and beat those cactus open. Get the water out of there. You can also take a small piece of plastic sheeting and build an upside-down pyramid. I mean, you'll find how to do this if you go to SurvivorMall.com. You can literally suck water out of the ground by using nature. I mean, the sun will heat that plastic up and suck the water up under there, that moisture, and you build an upside-down pyramid, and it'll draw down to a certain point and drip into a cup. You can also collect rainwater. There's lots of ways to stay alive, but you have to have water. The second thing that's very important, and this is probably, I'm looking at the clock here realizing we got maybe another 10, 15 minutes, you have to be able to have clean air. And this is one of the places that most people overlook. I mean, they'll put food aside, they'll put water aside, but they don't think about the fact that in some emergency situations, you have to be able to produce or attain clean air. A terrorist attack could send tiny, microscopic, biological matter into the air. For example, an explosion could release these fine debris that can cause lung damage, biological germs that could make you sick if they're inhaled or they're absorbed through cuts in your skin. Many of those agents can only hurt you if they get into your body, so you have to think about creating a barrier between yourself and that contamination. So be prepared to improvise with what you have on hand, like plastic sheeting and duct tape, to be able to create some kind of a barrier between yourself and these other contaminants. You have to be able to protect your mouth, your eyes, cuts in your skin, anything that could fit snugly over your nose or your mouth, including even if the only thing you have is dense weave cotton material, anything that can help filter through a mask or cloth and not around it could help. Once again, please go to SurvivorMall.com. Forget everything else you see there. Go to the left column, pull down to the left column, click on Free Survival Guides, and you'll find just tons of stuff there. You can download. It's not going to cost you a dime. It'll show you how to create a shelter in your home that's low cost or no cost, because you probably already have many of the materials, a safe place where you can go in a biological or nuclear emergency, where you can remain until there's an all clear. We've also searched the planet. We found, by the way, and created what I think is probably the most affordable nuclear biological safety kit there. I think it's $29 or $39, and I'm not even advertising it, because we're selling it at cost. But I mean, it's a mask that will protect. It's a gas mask that will protect you from nuclear and biological contaminants. It also has a book in there that was produced for the U.S. Military, actually, on how to survive nuclear and biological contaminants. There's also potassium iodide in there that'll protect your thyroid from absorbing nuclear contaminants. I mean, it's a lot of stuff. There's actually a canvas bag. There's all this stuff that this comes in. We also have a military-grade gas mask there, but I don't think you need it. The inexpensive one is there. It could keep you alive if that's the kind of emergency situation that we're facing.
Well, I think that's really wonderful to have that asset, that information available. That's SurvivalMall.com. Is that right? SurvivalMall.com?
SurvivalMall.com.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to ask Tom a question. Our guest is Tom Horn, and, of course, that's RaidersNewsNet.com. If you'd like to, or is it NewsNet or Network?
Raiders News Network.
Raiders News Network, and if you don't go to his website, he has really wonderful articles up there, and then, of course, we carry a number of the books that Tom has written about the spiritual aspect of the struggle, but he's also, of course, providing information on just plain survival. How are the American people going to be able to survive? So if you have any questions, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like additional information. Well, Tom, you know that one problem that bothers me is the fact that the attitude of the average American is that it is not going to happen here. Though it may happen over in Iraq, yes, things may be bad. In Afghanistan, yes, of course, things could be bad. In Iran, but nothing like this would ever happen here because God would never allow it. I mean, after all, we're all going to be whisked away before anything bad happens. And, of course, there are many, many people, my good friends, who do believe in a pre-tribulation rapture, but we don't necessarily have to even hypothesize a pre-tribulation rapture. The rapture could come 30 years after America has fallen. Is that a possibility?
Well, listen, I mean, look back over the last 2,000 years at some of the horrid situations that have developed. Look at Nazi Germany. And, you know, many of our relatives thought that when Hitler, came along with Nazi Germany, that this certainly had to be the end of time. They're looking for the rapture, but the rapture never happened. But there, in the meantime, there were an awful lot of people who were hurt, and our country is basically built on the blood of people who have sacrificed for a dream that they believed in different and vast kinds of wars, and sometimes those wars were actually created by people who weren't worthy of the blood of those who died to fight those wars, but it's because we believed in these great ideas. The bottom line is, and Dr. Monteith, I've seen this so many times when I was pastoring, so many times over 25 years, that within faith communities, part of the problem goes back to this Western dispensational fatalism that sees the end times chaos, but that fails to see God's instructions about the future and the responsibility that He gives people concerning preparation. There are Bible teachers who erroneously believe that emergency preparedness reflects a lack of faith in God. But if you look at the Bible and the exegesis that is plainly there, the opposite is actually the truth. I mean, the book of James measures faith by personal action. And Hebrews 11:7 describes true faith this way. It says, by faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear and prepared an ark to the saving of his house, end quote. God told Noah that he would destroy the earth by a flood, and he gave no instructions on how to be prepared so that he and his family could survive. Noah didn't know when the flood was going to come, only that it was prophesied that it was going to come, and therefore he prepared for it. And when the flood arrived, he was ready. His faith in and his obedience to God's word, in other words, his whole survival obedience, and ultimately his preparedness, saved his family and preserved the human race. Now that parallel between Noah and today, I think, is astonishing. Because as you and I have talked about many times, Jesus said, as it was in the days of Noah, Luke 17:26.
And I agree with you totally, and I think that the great tragedy is I think there's so many people who are simply saying, well, nothing bad is going to happen. That's really wishful thinking on their part. I think that if we are looking to the government to look after us, we're in for a terrible disappointment. I believe God calls each of us to be responsible, and that's why I do what I do, trying to sound a warning. I look upon part of my ministry as the watchman on the wall described in Ezekiel 3 and again in Ezekiel 33. And my job, and I believe Tom's job as well, is to, call out the warning that something terrible is about to happen. We are instructed that if we do not do that, the blood of the people who will fall will be on our hands. But if we do sound the warning and they don't heed our answer, don't heed our call, then their blood and the blood of their families is on their hands. Ladies and gentlemen, begin making preparations. At least get the information, start thinking about it, because I believe we're living in terribly, terribly dangerous times today. Well, Tom, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, the parallel between Noah and today is absolutely astonishing. There are other places in the Bible that provide lessons about preparedness, including principles in the book of Psalms, Proverbs, the parable of the faithful and evil servants, Matthew 24:45, the parable of the 10 virgins, Matthew 25:1-13, I believe, Timothy 5:8 even goes further, Dr. Monti, saying that a person who does not provide for the survival of their relatives has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So, given these instructions and the belief that's held by many today that we're living in the last days, and also the belief that are held by many of us who know beyond a measure of doubt that it will be a miracle, and I'm praying to God that He will give us this miracle, that there is not an extraordinary circumstance that develops on U.S. soil before the end of this year. But looking at all of that, I mean, leaders of religious institutions, such as, thank God for Dr. Monteith, urgently need to educate their listeners about taking personal responsibility for preparedness in an age that is certainly of growing uncertainty. I mean, there have been dramatic lessons over the last few years that have proven that we can't depend on government agencies such as FEMA to save us if we need them. In fact, there's a report last month that found that 5 years after September 11 terror attacks, the government still is not prepared to respond to a major public emergency such as bioterrorism or a pandemic flu outbreak or any other thing. So what can one do to help people with disaster preparedness? That's the good news. We've provided a lot of it for you free. Go to SurvivorMall.com. Go to the left column. Forget everything else you see there. Pull down until you see the free survival guides link. Click on it. You'll find hundreds and hundreds of pages, dozens of free books, all in one place. You can download all of them. We'll pay for the bandwidth. It's not going to cost you a penny. And it will provide everything you know, everything you need to know. And these are not books that were written by people who are not experienced. These are written by military strategists that were written by civil defense persons. Some of them are actually produced by government studies. They'll show you how to stay safe in a bio-warfare situation. They'll give you facts on potassium iodide, medical MBC battle books, Department of Education crisis plannings for your city. I mean, everything you need.
Let's quickly go to Bill, who's calling from South Dakota. Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Doing just fine. I was just running through my shortwave radio at night and was able to pick you up.
Okay, fine. Do you have a quick question?
I had something to
hold
say.
Hold that just for a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Tom Horn. We've got Bill calling from South Dakota. We're just about out of time, but did you have a quick comment, Bill?
Yes, we're all kind of geared up to our lifestyle right now, and what we think tough times are compared to what God thinks tough times are completely two different things.
I think you're absolutely right.
Some people need to open their eyes and take a check around their surroundings.
Well, we just hope that people at programs like this will get them to start thinking. God bless and thanks for calling.
All right, thank you too. Bye.
And Tom, I just wanted to thank you for being with us. We're out of time, but again, it's survivalmall.com. And God bless. We'll talk to you off the air, and I'd like to get a little more information about some of the things we talked about tonight.
All right, Dr. Munn.
Good night. God bless. All right, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed our program with Tom Horn. I thought I did an excellent job of getting the information out, and I hope you'll heed what he has to say. And, Chris, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you believe that we have an important message and you'd like us to continue reaching out every week on about 60 different outlets, radio stations, shortwave, internet, satellite, why, oh, maybe you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Give us a call. Remember our all-day conference on the 28th of October here in the North Shore, Monterey Bay. And if you can make it, give us a call. We'd love to see you. If you're local, of course, you won't need hotel reservations. If you're coming from elsewhere, why, we do have a block of rooms set aside, but only for about another week and a half, and then you're on your own. So, and then, of course, we do want to tell you that we do have an emergency food catalog, if you're interested in that, and a number of supplies offered there. And if you'd like to get a free catalog, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We hope many of you will read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because it gets into the spiritual aspect of what's happening. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. I talk on the Forbidden Secret, if you're interested in what's happening financially. Our talk and syllabus on the Financial Tsunami. If you're interested in why we are in Iraq today, Iraq, the Untold Story, plus the syllabus that goes with that, that has a large segment of the web page put out by the Project for the New American Century, the people who really run the Bush administration and are intent upon plunging us into a war with Iran. And then, of course, we have so many other talks on sustainable development, and on sustainable development, the road to world government, or sustainable development. We want you to get the catalog there. We think it's an excellent source of information. Just go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Look at the things that we have there. You can listen to our programs. We have them archived. You can certainly see many of our videos, which are posted on the website. There are really hundreds of books, we think, all of which are important. Let me mention Tom Horn's books, The Ahriman Gate, the story, of course, is effort to cross human DNA with animal DNA, although written as a fiction, work of fiction, it is really based upon fact. And then, of course, the very factual book, Nephilim Stargate, and then his books on spiritual warfare and the gods that walk among us. They're all available from Radio Liberty. And if you'd like more information, our number 1-800-544-8927. And behind everything going on, a powerful spiritual war between the forces of darkness and the forces of light. So please pray for America. Pray for revival, because if this country doesn't turn back to God, why, of course, God is going to abandon America. And then we ask you to pray for our leaders, our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.